Hey, it's Lex and Stacy here. It is time for Threesome Podcast 26.
Holy crap.
There's 52 weeks in a year. We just did half of them.
Of course, it took a lot longer than 6 months.
Yeah.
Due to delays and holidays and things, but
that's
yes.
Right. Yeah, but we now have 6 months worth of shows in the hopper when this is over.
I think it's safe to say we're not virgins anymore, Lex.
No, we're not. It's been
How does
safe
it feel
to
knowing?
Say that for so long.
How does it feel knowing that you popped that particular cherry of mine?
Oh, God, Stacy, we could fill up a bottle of cherries now. But anyway, we digress.
Mm-hmm. And so I have to be careful because I introduced my mom to podcasts last night.
Oh, you did?
She didn't know that she could do that on her iPhone. And so I showed her. And then said, you cannot look mine up. You can't listen to this one. And she was like, all right, fine. But I know she will because she's a creeper.
Yeah. Yeah. She. Once they know, they know.
Yes.
It's just kind of the way it is. So I think she pretty much knows what you're about by now.
Yes. If, she used to listen to the show.
If not, that's one dumb bitch right there.
It was because of a conversation we had on the air that she learned all about anal sex. I was like, oh, well, so sorry, Mom.
Good times.
Yes. That was back before the FCC cracked down on everyone.
Yeah. Better known as back before Janet Jackson whipped her tits out at the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Why we paid for that, I have no idea, but we did. Anyway.
America, we've just become more and more puritanical.
I sure enjoyed my time with the company attorneys after that. You guys could still say dick, but you can't say, like, suck my dick. Okay?
You could say dick, but you can't use it in a setting where it's actually referring to a penis. But you can say, wow, you're a dick.
Yeah, well, you can even say... You can even say the word dick, even if it does go near that reference-wise, but you can't say anything about the dick doing anything.
Like doing the dishes, yeah. Laundry.
Like, what a monster dick that guy is. But if you say, man, that guy took that monster dick and did something with it, you could be in trouble.
How unfortunate.
Yeah, it's stupid. I mean, it goes...
Everybody knows, and especially all a male-dominated genre of radio, you want to talk about penises. Guys like talking about penises.
One of the most embarrassing moments in my parenthood was was watching my wife and her friend... Try to have the birds and the bees talk with Sam, knowing that she knew far beyond that at her age, just cause of school.
Yes.
And she just sat on the couch, and I was at the kitchen table, kind of not involved in the conversation, but she could see me. And every once in a while, she'd just look over and kind of raise her eyebrows like, this is happening.
Secretly, she's going, thank God Dad's not involved. Thank you. Thank you, Lord.
My sexual talk with her was literally 3 minutes. We were going to the barn. I'll never forget it. And I just looked at her and I said, all right, so you got a boyfriend now. You're, you know, 13-ish, 14-ish. You know, it's you've pretty much seen and heard it all from your friends at school. Am I correct in assuming so? She goes, yeah. I said, all right, well, then I'm just going to give you my 2 cents worth without it being creepy. I know it's not a question of if, but when. So this is what I want you to look out for. I want you, I said, because I went through this, and guys go through this too. this should take place with somebody you kind of like and care about. I said, so they take care
or of... Or drunk on prom night.
Well, even on prom night, you're with somebody that you probably know and like, you know? So I said, I want you to just be careful not to get pregnant and get diseases. And I want you to, most of all, be with somebody who likes you. And that's it.
Did you give her the lovemaking versus fucking conversation?
No. That was the conversation. That was it.
Gotcha.
Because that was me telling her, be with somebody you love. Be with somebody you care for. You know? Because I think that whole lovemaking versus fucking thing's ridiculous anyway.
Well, I can tell you most women who, you know, losing their virginity probably do not want the crap pounded out of them right. The very first time.
Right.
Especially if you're hoping that they'll ever do it again with you.
Yeah.
You know? Like, no, please keep that away from me. I still can't walk right.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been with a virgin, so I don't know. I've never had to go through that protocol or that bullshit. You know, I went right into whores.
Well, high five.
So, you know, and back then, a whore to me was somebody who did it once. So,
true.
You know. You poor girls. So, you know, that was it. I didn't want to overstate it, overthink it. I know you've heard so many horrible things already. You know, that this is just my take on it, Sam, you know? She appreciated it. She's told me that numerous times. Although the comedic value of the one her mom did, she appreciates also.
See, I can remember, and likewise, I was aware of things, you know, and I think most kids are, unless you homeschool them or something, you know, you get an idea of what all takes place and the intricacies of it. And I remember we were watching news, like 6 o'clock news, and I was pretty young, and there was a story about a woman getting raped. And I went blink, blink, blink with the big eyes and turned around and looked at my mom and dad and said, "What's rape?" And they looked at each other and my dad's newspaper went up over his face because, you know, he's reading the paper and mom's like, "Come on." And she took me into another room and then
raped you.
No. I'm just going to show you. It's easier than telling. She actually used the word fresh. It's when a boy gets fresh with a girl and she doesn't want him to. And I just sat there and enjoyed.
And by fresh, I mean you have a big black cock in your ass when you don't want one.
And I just sat there and watched her. So uncomfortable. It was amazing.
And no, I'm not a racist. I had to say big black cock because there aren't any big white ones. So there you go.
Is it weird that I didn't even notice?
Not at all. Most of you just hear big cock and get smiles on your faces.
A little giggle, a little blush.
Like I so eloquently told one of my chicks one time, that's why we have fists.
God. And then she slowly backed away from you.
As so many have. As we recant serial killer sex from last week. All right, so at the end of the show last week, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but we so desperately wanted to, and the conversation was starting to go into the show The Slap. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
No,
but it is on iTunes for free right now. If you have that. And the premise of the show is simply, you can already tell it's character building because in the first episode, it's this one guy's 40th birthday and everybody's coming to the house for his 40th birthday. They set up his character as a guy that's an assistant DA getting ready to be promoted to deputy DA, and he finds out he doesn't get the job. So he has to go home that weekend and act like his 40th birthday means something when the job he's been waiting for years has just slipped through his fingers.
Awesome.
He also is shown having flashbacks to a really beautiful girl who you find out later on is their babysitter.
Oops, I fell.
Yeah.
Right into the babysitter.
And they haven't done anything yet, but it's heading in that direction. It's flirty. It's, you know, and at this party, somebody sees him kind of getting flirty with her and that her and he laughing and kind of, you know, rubbing against each other like people do and stuff like that. So everybody's radar is up there. And then it's like a cousin, a brother, the parents, a couple friends. The one brother is a guy who's kind of a hippie type guy.
Awesome.
It's Thomas Sadowski, who was in The Newsroom, who I think is just a great actor and really, really good. Just a good actor altogether. And he and his wife have an 8-year-old kid that they're still breastfeeding.
Oh.
And she openly breastfeeds him at the party several times. And of course, everybody's like disgusted by that. But they're all earthy.
He has teeth at that point.
Yeah. And they're all earthy and stuff like that. And you know, everybody's like, what? Whatever, you know. But the kid who ultimately gets slapped is that kid.
Okay.
All right. And he's already gone through the guy's house and destroyed like a bunch of his albums. He has an album, a vinyl collection, and he's, yeah, they walk in the room and records are all over the place. And, you know, and the guy's like, what the fuck, man? What's going on? And his dad goes, you know, he didn't know, man. You know, it's like, it's just a few records. What's the big deal? And he goes, all right, just get out of here. I'll take care of it. Get out. You know, like if I have to explain to you what the big deal is, then just get the fuck out. So they're all sitting on the back porch and everything. And the kids are in the backyard and they're like, you know, playing baseball, wiffle ball, actually. But this guy brings his whole equipment bag and the breastfeeding little piece of shit kid goes over and picks up a wooden bat out of the bag. And it's just in the middle of the yard swinging this thing, like barely missing the noggins of every kid that's out there.
Oh.
And the
I'm getting tense just listening to this.
Yeah. So one of the other parents, the cousin, you know, turns around, the guy that was in Heroes, you know, that looks, the guy that played Spock in the Star Trek movies.
Zachary Quinto.
Quinto, yeah. He turns around and sees the kid doing this, and he goes, hey, you know, and he goes out there, and he goes, you don't ever swing a wooden bat, you know, and the kid, like, he's trying to get the bat out of his hand, and the kid doesn't get it, so he just finally rips it out of his hand and throws it on the ground, and he grabs him by the shoulders, and the kid kicks him in the shin, and he just has this reaction where he slaps the piss out of him, and the whole party just goes, poo.
Now, does he only slap him once, and it's just a good one? Or is
just
it okay.
one really good slap.
Open palm. It stings. But it's more humiliating than anything.
Yeah, it was, you know, definitely being 8 years old, it hurt him, but it didn't break anything or blacken right. any eyes or anything like that. So the hippie parents want, you know, don't let it go, you know, because, of course, their kid can't do any wrong. So,
yeah, you can let your albums go, but, you know, I...
So the way that... I think the way the show's going to be set up, and episode 2 is on Thursday night. We are recording this show on the 17th of February, so it'll be tomorrow. No, 18th of February. So we'll do this. The show will be happening by the time this goes to LT2, and we have it up on iTunes.
Okay.
But I suspect that episode 2 is going to be a different person, and they're going to reshoot that whole day all over again.
Oh, you think so?
I think that's what's going to happen here, yes.
And at the end of each day, will everyone be taking turns swatting the kid?
I think once they do like 4 or 5 episodes of the main adult players, you know, and I don't know if they're going to do the kid's perspective or not, which means we'll get to see some breasts. You know, obviously, I've seen some scenes where they're in court later on and stuff like that, and how it's like, I'm going to shut him up once and for all and all this kind of stuff. But I think the fact that they use the guy's name where the house got shot, I think they're going to use other important players and have their perspective of that day and what they think of the other people in the house and the kid and all that stuff. So we'll have a clear-cut view of what everybody thinks before it moves to the lawsuit and ugliness and all that stuff.
Now, would you say, and obviously I've not seen it, and I honestly don't know if I will get to see it, but would you say this to me sounds like it is a huge commentary on the fact that people are pretty much just shitty parents today?
Well, certainly them. You know, they're the guy who did the slapping, his kid is this really sweet, well-adjusted, well-mannered, educated, you know, he obviously was raised properly.
A good kid.
A good kid whose dad did the slapping.
Okay.
You know, so you're left with the fact that, okay, this guy's a good parent. This kid's got his shit together. He gets good grades. He's well-adjusted socially.
He's probably not getting beaten behind closed doors.
Exactly.
But they're putting the happy face on for the public.
No, I think he's genuinely happy.
Right. No, yeah. That's what I'm saying. You know, yeah. There's not the ickiness going on.
Yeah, he's in a happy household.
Right.
You know, because he's been told the rights and wrongs and isn't socially fucked up and all that. You know, and they make that abundantly clear at the beginning of the show. You know, the kid gets out and he sees his uncle. He's like, you know, hey, Uncle Tom, how you doing, buddy? You know, and all this stuff. And he's like, you still getting good grades? He's like, yes, sir. You know, that type of stuff. Yeah, you know, just how you'd want your son to turn out.
Right.
You know, so they make that abundantly clear. So the table's set that the guy who did the slapping obviously knows how to raise a kid. It's made abundantly clear that the two hippies are making their kid a fucking mess and giving him a sense of entitlement to everything. So you definitely pick somebody to choose sides with.
Right. And I would have to think most people are going to side with the good dad, even though they themselves might be the crappy hippie parents. You know,
I'm not.
It's easier to see it.
I'm not so sure. After talking to a few people that have seen it, it's not going down like that.
Really? Because you're getting, are you hearing people saying, nobody touches my kid no matter what?
Yeah.
That kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. It's like, I don't believe in disciplining kids like that. And I'm like, do you believe in breastfeeding your kid at 8? You believe in letting your kid go into somebody else's house and throw their shit all over the place?
You know, my mom and dad, that was, you know, and I come from a family where my parents remained married, you know, all through my childhood and everything. So no broken home. My mom and dad were sticklers about my brother and I knowing how to act out in public. Now, we could be little shits at home. In fact, it's kind of funny. We could beat the crap out of each other and be swinging like actual garden tools at each other. But as soon as we went out in public, we had a certain way that we acted. And, you know, there were simple rules. If you're at someone's house, you never, ever, ever go into the mom and dad's bedroom.
Right.
You never go into a lady's purse. Right. To this day, if someone, a friend of mine, if her purse is sitting there and she's like, hey, could you reach in? I just give her her purse. Yeah. I'm like, I was raised, I do not go in your purse. You know, we didn't speak until we were spoken to. Right. I mean, and it wasn't strict and unhappy. It was just, you know, if you're at grandma's house and the adults are talking, you don't butt in. But on the upside, everybody always made sure to include the kids and talk to them too.
Yeah. I mean, when we went to restaurants, if we even wiggled in our chairs, my dad would just look at us like, no wiggling.
Oh, I know. I lived with a guy long time ago, and we were at a restaurant one time, and his little 4-year-old son is running around the restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at him and I said, are you going to make him sit down? And he was like, no, he's got a lot of energy he's got to burn off. And I'm like, I didn't say anything because his parents were there and everything. But it was like, wow, you know, it's not fair to everyone else in this restaurant.
No.
Because your kid right now needs to burn off some energy.
I remember one time I adjusted myself in my chair because I was sitting on my foot and it was falling asleep. So I just moved in my chair and I guess it looked like I was getting out or whatever the case is. And my dad goes, sit the fuck down. And I just looked at him like, okay. You know,
kind of, you don't have the heart to say, I truly wasn't doing anything. You just go, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I just went, okay, you know. And man, there'd be kids running all around the restaurant, you know, like, oh, come play with us. And we're like,
Oh, I know. And you, as a kid, you feel kind of left out. Like, it's not fair. Everyone else gets to have fun. But I will say, as a grown up now, I am very, very appreciative of my parents teaching me this.
So, I was at Dave and Buster's with a friend of mine and his kids. He had two daughters and I had Sam there and we were playing video games and stuff like that and decided we were hungry. So we're in this booth, and Samantha's sitting down, you know, with her hands in her lap, just waiting for her food. And the two girls are turned around, and they're making faces and looking into the booth behind us. So I waited for him to say something, and he didn't. So I said, girls, will you sit down, please? And they both look at their dad, and I said, you don't need to look at your dad. You need to sit down. Now, nobody likes you looking at their food while they eat. Nobody's that cute, including you. So he goes, hey, man, take it easy. You know, he goes, they're just kids. And I said, yeah, and they're going to stay that way unless you fucking raise them. They shouldn't be staring over the booth at people. It's like, I said, dude, if I had two kids staring over me while we were eating, I'd be poking them in the eye with my fork.
Yes. Because first of all, you know, as a grown-up, you're sitting there, you're eating the meal that you're paying for. You went out for whatever reason, probably because you didn't want to cook or hang out with someone. And now you've got this little shit who's ruining your experience.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I just, oh, I hate being put in that situation.
And he says to me, he goes, why are you so strict? I said, because other people's good time is at stake. And I don't want my kid ruining it.
Mm-mm.
And you're not saying anything to them. You think it's perfectly okay for them to peep over and watch four people they don't fucking know eat, but I don't.
Exactly.
I said, I want to get up and leave. I'm so uncomfortable. He goes, oh, well, why didn't you just say so? I said,
because
I didn't
think. Because as a grown-up, being the grown-up in the situation, you should have enough sense to be able to assess what's going on around you to see that your kids are making people uncomfortable.
And he goes,
they aren't cute.
He goes, hey, man, after all, it is Dave and Buster's. And I said, so?
Not at the table, out at other places, but...
I said, you know, I've seen some of the Dave and Buster's TV commercials. Never once have I seen a family full of kids peering at somebody else's fucking food while they eat.
Please, sir, could we have some more?
So, man, it's so it's irritating when the parents can't see it.
Or they see it and they think it's funny or cute or look it. Everybody thinks my little darling is precious. That's, I think, what ultimately it is. Look, she's making faces as that old man. And surely he thinks she's cute.
And one of these kids' name was Eve. And I called her Evil.
Oh, it was that kid. You've talked about that kid before.
Yeah, the rubber band snapping kid. Same kid. Anyway,
Okay.
Her what parents are divorced now.
Huh?
Her parents are divorced now. Big surprise there.
Do you remember the movie The Hand That Rocks the Cradle with Rebecca De Mornay?
Oh, yeah.
There was a scene. Now, obviously, I found her evil. Don't get me wrong. I mean, she was bad. But there was that scene where the kid was bullying the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she went up to the schoolyard and grabbed that kid by the arm and twisted his arm and started talking to him in low tones about how she was going to kill him and do things to him.
Uh-huh.
And he wet himself and then she walked away.
Right.
And there have been times that I have daydreamed about doing that to some kids. Not random kids, but when I see a kid, it's like, God, I would love to literally go Rebecca De Mornay on that kid right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, If whatever it takes to scare a kid out of that type of behavior, I say is okay.
And don't get me wrong, I don't want to go around slapping or pinching or shoving people's kids.
I
never have. But there, you know, if it came to that point, it's just like, you little shit, shut the fuck up. God, I hate you.
I want to open up a place where you can bring your kid that's a dick, and we. An hour later, we'll hand them back perfectly good.
It's scared straight for toddlers.
Mm-hmm. For up to 8 years old. So, I hear you're a bully.
Yeah, that's right.
So are we. For the next 60 minutes, you're going to see what it's like to be running into you.
And guess what? Your parents are paying for this.
Yeah. They paid for
There's no one you can tell on.
They paid for the deluxe package, and they're the first.
But you know what? I think that parents who would pay to go have their kids go through something like that are also the ones who have already made sure their kids aren't little shits.
Yeah.
It's the parents who don't know that their precious little darlings are shits that really could use that service.
Right. Well, it's like my dad said. You know, when I was getting bullied as a kid, he goes, until you do something about it, until you make him pay for even looking in your direction, he goes, this is going to happen. He goes, and I can't help you. You just have to help yourself. And about a year and a half later, I found myself clubbing this guy on the head with my book bag because he walked up to me for the 500th time and I just turned around with a full swing and a bag full of books and knocked him the fuck out. And he was laying on the ground and I continued to beat him in the head with these books and to the point where people were pulling me off of him. And my dad was right. Nothing but respect from that point on.
My brother had something. Now, I don't think he was bullied per se, but I remember my dad had called me. I was at their house. I was out of school. My brother was in high school, early high school. And my dad called me because he was a school teacher and said, be ready. I think your brother is about to get suspended. Which was like, oh my God. Because, you know, he was salutatorian of his class and stuff, you know. And what ultimately happened was he was walking down the hall with some friends. And this kid, Ben, who's in prison now, was kicking him, you know, kicking his feet as he's walking. Mm-hmm. And then reached out and, like, pushed his books on the floor. Just classic douche stuff, yeah. You know? But apparently my brother was having a really bad day because he's never been this kind of person. And for what I heard from his friends and stuff was my brother turned around and basically palmed this guy's face, picked him up. So there was that millisecond where his feet were off the ground and then just threw him. Because my brother's like this big, gentle giant kind of thing. And it was like, whoa, mm-hmm. way to go. And I actually did treat him with a little more respect at home after yeah. that. Because it yeah. was like, he does have a temper if he's pushed enough, you know.
Who doesn't?
I know.
I mean, I remember watching this guy walking across the street for the fourth year in a row of every day after school. And at this point, I think I'd just gone into seventh grade, and it was like the third or fourth day of school. And, you know, in seventh grade, the dynamics change. All of a sudden, you start noticing all girls, and you're placing, you know, the pecking order and stuff like that. You know, stuff in sixth grade, you were like, well, whatever, you know.
You're still playing with G.I. Joe in the sixth grade. Yeah. Seventh grade, you go, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it happens that quick. And I just remember it's like, I can't take another day of this guy crossing the street. I think I'll take every book I have and knock him in the head with it. And,
you go.
And I had a friend of mine with me, and I took my books off my back, and he came up and got what he didn't get for 4 years in a row. You know, and I next thing I know, I'm being pulled off of, he's face down on the grass, not moving. And my friend told me I must have hit him 50 times. And
so you look like Ralphie from Christmas Story.
And there are like 10 people watching, and like nobody's saying anything, you know, because they thought I killed him. And from that point on, not only did I get respect out of him, we ended up being friends. We still talk to this day.
Well, good. You mended a bridge.
And, you know, I still call him a douchebag for doing it. Yeah, he called me. We talk about once a year. He called me up and he goes, hey, man, what's going on? I said, oh, you know, it's the same old thing, really. I said, how about you? He goes, well, I just got promoted, actually. And I went, did you bully your way into the position or did you earn it?
So you yeah. have not let it go.
No, of course not.
40 plus years later.
Yeah.
And Lex isn't letting it go.
That's right. He just laughs. Yeah. He's just like, oh my God. Yeah. I said, did you raise a bunch of little dickhead boys? You know, they like going around just terrorizing the schoolyard. No.
Lex.
Yeah.
So have you ever had to get shitty? I mean, there was that time at Dave and Buster's, but have you ever had to get shitty with someone's kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there.
Well, in Evil, there was the rubber band thing. Yeah. You got kind of shitty with her. Understandable. Well,
there was a girl here in Texas that Sam was friends with, and I had to tread lightly because, you know, when Sandy moved out here, she didn't have many friends. You know, she had to start all over again there. So this was the child of one of her friends. And they still have buku amounts of money. And I'll just put it in perspective. Sam spent the night over there. And when I went to pick her up, the dad was cooking breakfast. And he's not there much because he owns a big company and everything. So he's in two different cities half the week. And he's just not there much. And it shows. And he goes, how do you get Sam to be so polite and so well behaved? And he goes, she can come over here anytime she wants. She is such a great kid. And I went, listen, she's not that great of a kid. Yours are just a mess. And he laughs. He goes, that bad, huh? I went, yes.
And I'm not joking. There's nothing jovial or funny about what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, they were like in my house one day, and they're like running around going, ah! You know, got their arms out and everything. And one of the girls runs a little too far outside the circle and runs right into my TV. And of course, I get up and I go, no! and go over and I start hugging my TV like, are you okay, baby? And the kid's on the ground holding her head going, ah, ah. I'm like, well, you ran into my TV. What'd you expect?
Dumbass.
So she goes home and tells her mom that I care more about my TV than her. And she goes up and she goes, can you explain to me what happened? And I went, oh, yeah, sure. My living room became a track and... You know, all three girls were running the 440 around it, and yours was in the outside lane and hit my TV. And yes, I got up horrified and went right past her and checked on my TV. I said, 'cause call me crazy, but nobody should be running full speed into my TV.
No, that's true. You don't expect that.
I said, and I know my kid would never come over your house and do such a thing. So why are you calling me?
I guess that's the other thing, too. And unless she just wanted to make, I don't know. I guess, you know, I'd have to hear the conversation. Why would you call someone when clearly your kid was being a shit?
Yeah, it's like, man, you know what your kids are. You know, it's like when I would hear about a scenario where kids were involved, I knew when Sam was involved.
Right.
You know, she'd just get in the car and I'd just look at her and go, don't even. I know you were part of this.
You know, my mom and dad was being school teachers. You know, the parents, they hated parent conference, you know, the teacher conferences. Because it's like they have to sit there and they have to, you know, and yeah, there's the parents who come in who have the great kids and they love telling them, you have wonderful kids, you know, positive reinforcement. Please, please keep your kid cool. And then you get the parents who come in who the dad's a big blowhard, you know, and talking loud over everybody else and everything. And, you know, why are you mean to my kid? It's like the first thing they say. And it's like, okay, first of all, if your kid's coming home and tell... Just my experience now, and I'm not a parent, but if my kid came home after knowing how my mom and dad, like with the teaching thing, if my kid came home and said, Mrs. So-and-so is mean to me, my first question would be, what did you do to make her mean to you?
Exactly.
Because you know what? Guess what, folks? Yeah, there are, I guess, shitty teachers out there, but as a whole, teachers aren't looking to go out of their way to make your kid miserable.
No, far from it.
It's certainly not because of the, you know, people don't become teachers because of the big money.
No.
And, you know, the stress-free job. They do it because they actually, a lot of them have the calling to do it and to make, you know, a difference for some kid somewhere.
Right.
And so just the idea that when a kid comes home and says, you know, so-and-so is mean to me, the teacher, the first thing you get is an irate parent showing up like in the principal's office, wanting the teacher's head and job and everything else. And it's like, okay, are you aware that your kid stabbed three people with scissors?
Yeah.
Well, no. And he wouldn't do that. You know, that kind of thing. Sorry, yes, rant over. I just hate.
Yes, he would. So anyway, that's what the show's all about. Gotcha. The discussion we just had is pretty much where this show's going. And you definitely will take a side. And I'm pretty sure it'll be on the same one I'm on.
And don't get me wrong, I love hippies. I love them. But you can be a hippie and still have, you know, decent, polite, respectful children.
Oh, listen, I got some friends, you know, that Lisa introduced me to in Oklahoma, and I was blown away to find out there's five kids in the family. You know, they're adults now, you know, ranging from 40 all the way down to 20.
Right.
And their parents are my age and are pretty much you know, non-party affiliated, you know, so they raised them middle of the road politically, you know, to pretty much chase their own values and stuff like that. But they are shining beacons of what you don't expect to see in Oklahoma. like one of them jumped into one of my political arguments on Facebook, and I was like, Elizabeth, is this you? You know, because I just expect anybody in Oklahoma to be Republican. It's a very red state.
Right.
You know, I mean, Lisa's mom is, oh my God. I can't have discussions with her. And she's an extremely smart woman, you know, like loaded with common sense and stuff like that. But some of the stuff that comes out of her mouth politically, I just go, oh, my God. Shit. Fuck. I'm speechless.
Well, I would just like to say my mom, she taught for 32 plus years. And when she talks about teaching and students and such, she can recall a kid from 40 years ago that she had, you know, in seventh grade geography, and she can remember their name, and she can, you know, she'll say, you know, he or she was the nicest kid, you know, and, mm-hmm. and those are the teachers remember either they're really, really, really great kids, and it doesn't even have to be necessarily a good student, but just that sweet kid who is nice to the teacher and to the classmates, and then the really shitty kids. Yeah. Those are the only kids that teachers remember throughout their careers. But my mom can name, you know, she's got her favorites over the course of her lengthy career. You know, there were those kids that she calls sweethearts, and she always thinks very fondly of them.
Yeah, I was pretty much a good kid in school. You know, I really didn't raise a lot of hell or anything. I just kind of kept quiet and stayed under the radar. You know, I didn't answer a lot of questions and stuff like that. I was just kind of one of those non-existent, fill-a-desk type of kids, you know?
Right.
And all my teachers throughout grade school and stuff like that were very kind to me. Even though I wasn't one of the best students in the world, because I, you know, I had a wandering mind and, you know, that. Who knows with all the diagnoses that are out there now for ADD and stuff like that. You know, I'm pretty sure I probably had something like that because, God, I fucking hated school. Hated it. I mean, I could not keep my mind on it.
Right.
You know, and finally in high school, I was talking to a counselor and she said, not everybody's cut out for this, Lex. Not everybody's good at this. Not everybody likes it. Not everybody stays interested in it. But you have to do it.
Have you considered a career in radio?
Well, she did say to me, she goes, you're probably going to end up in something of a creative type environment.
Right.
She goes, all your test scores and everything are indicative of the fact that, you know, you have a very sharp brain. You just don't like doing the work. You are not stimulated by this, which was absolutely true.
Yep.
She goes, you seem to have tons of common sense, and you've probably told yourself by now that math is not going to be your thing, so why the fuck do it?
See, do you remember, I remember we had to take those, like, those tests that would kind of tell your aptitude for things to give you an idea of what jobs you might want to look into as you get older and start planning for college. And everybody, no matter who or what they were doing, everybody tested into being a mortician. Mm-hmm. It was like the first thing on each student's list. And it's like, wow, is there like a mortician shortage out there or something? Because they certainly want to push everyone into that. Good grief.
Well, let's face it. It's the one profession that's not going to dry up.
True.
Well, I mean, it will, but after you've already gotten paid.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, before it becomes ashes to ashes and dust to dust, your $7,000 is a must.
Oh my God, you've got a logo, a slogan.
That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I like that. It's catchy and it rhymes.
Write that shit all day long.
I guess radio was the right.
There's people making billions of dollars coming up with stuff not even that good. So, you know, it's, you know, she just finally said to me, guidance counselor is really cool. She said, I see you got an A in your mass media class. She goes, what? She goes, I know what that class is supposed to be for, but what are you doing there? And I said, we make TV shows and commercials and stuff like that with handheld cameras, and we get put into groups. And she goes, ah. She goes, well, you may want to point yourself in that direction. You obviously excel in there. Although I don't think your Grotex commercial was very tasteful. And I went, oh, you heard about that? She goes, yeah. That was my, we had this real hot girl in the class. And basically the bang slogan at the end of the commercial, after we did this, you know, filtered sunrise, sunset, her running through fields and talking about talking about feeling fresh and all this stuff. The slug line at the end of the commercial was, Grotex, we're not number one, but we're up in there. And I remember that the teacher in the class was all of 24 years old. And she goes, first off, it was very well shot. She said, I don't know how to grade this because I don't know if you'd see this commercial on TV or not.
In select markets.
And that's what I said. I said, in Jacksonville? No, but in Pittsburgh? All day. I said, except the girl running through the field that had facial hair.
Nice.
And we also made a movie. We had to make a 20-minute long movie, and we made this like Back to the Future type movie. Well before Back to the Future came out. And it was like it was shot at an old crystal in Jacksonville. And you know, so we got a couple of 1957 Chevys and stuff like that. And it's this thing where I go back in time, and I'm dressed like it's 1975, you know, and I start getting pushed around and bullied and beat up by all these guys in leather coats and everything, and I get made sorry for by this girl. And I grab her by the hand and I go back through the tunnel I came through to go back in time. And I come out on the other side and, you know, it's like I go from having, you know, this bad haircut and everything to having, you know, long hair, and everybody's got long hair and, you know, you got surfer stuff on and stuff like that. And you know, it's like there were no words in it. You know, we just had to come up with some sort of theme, you know.
Right.
And we got an A on that.
Well, good.
And everybody in that group ended up in the business. Two of the people were in TV still, and I ended up in radio and all that stuff. And it was just, yeah, that pretty much was the start of it. That I wanted to be involved in something like that. It was fun.
Creativity is fun.
Yeah, it is. I was always told it wouldn't pay any money.
Well, you are definitely one of the few who got to show them. And radio is pretty much a labor of love for 99% of the people who go into it.
And stupid me, when I got into radio, I ended up in the management side.
That was, well...
You know,
that's where the money is, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, that's where competence is dreadfully needed.
Yes.
Yeah, so I got both of my program director jobs based on the fact I was the only one who had the aptitude and the desire to do it. Because I, you know, it's like I'm watching it being done going, oh my God, we're so fucking bad. It sounds so bad.
Yeah. Well, I remember,
I wanted the job just to fix it.
Right. Working, you know, at Rock 105 there on Hogan Road, you pull into the parking lot and you can see the vast difference in vehicles. There's the air staff cars.
Yes.
Which are all like bondoed together and rusted and, you know, cracked windows and everything. And then there's the salespeople cars.
Right.
And the people in upper management. And then you, Lex and Terry, with your Jaguars and your Beamers and Mercedes.
Shut up.
It's like, well, it's true, though.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm talking about. People would use like the station bumper stickers to actually like hold their bumper onto the car and stuff.
And then there's Terry, Priceline negotiator. Schwartz is like, how about we give you twice what you're making? And I'm just shaking my head no. And Terry's like, you know, it's more money he's ever made in his life. So he's like, he goes, that sounds pretty amazing. And I'm like, it's not even close to amazing. Shut up. Don't say another word.
Was he Shatnering your deal?
Well, he to him, it was a lot of money.
Right.
You know, and to me, it was like, no, we just quintupled your ratings. No. Absolutely fucking not. And, you know, it's like I ended up getting him like six times he was making. He's like, oh my God, this is fucking crazy. And I'm like, we should have made even more than this. And then it was just fun. You know, it's always been a good team because of that, you know, because the creative and, you know, the structuring of show side, you know, is definitely him. And I handled dealing with the schmucks.
Right.
And it's just always, it still to this day works out well that way, even though he's become much more adept business wise.
Everybody, you know, needs a Lex as their partner. The evil criminal mastermind who can work deals and get you stupid money.
Yeah. Because somebody has to ask for it. They're not going to just give it to you.
And I think a lot of people don't feel comfortable. And I've read articles, you know, where especially women, that's where women get the shaft, because women have a harder time asking for raises and being forceful in saying, no, I'm worth it, than a guy is.
Well, at the time I was program director, Terry wasn't. So he was, you know, at one point the GM said, why don't you just let Lex and I talk this over? You can go, you know. And I said, you know, and he looked at me and I went, yeah, go ahead, dude. You'll be happy. He goes, I trust you, man. I'm like, okay. So when he went out of the room, you know, of course Schwartz goes, you know I can't pay him that. I went, not only can you pay him that, you're going to pay him that. And you're going to pay me a lot more than that because I'm still your program director. So your free ride's over. We did what we said we were going to do. Now it's time to pay the piper. And you know you're going to sell the shit out of this and you're going to make tons more money than this station's ever made. And dare I say it, we're probably going to outbill your precious little ape.
Not the ape.
He goes, I don't know. That's really... And I went, it's going to happen. I said, your morning show's not going to get the rate ours is. You know, we're going to end up burying it financially. And it's going to be fun because you never thought that would happen.
I know, I was going to say, that felt good, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. He goes,
that radio station could do no wrong.
Uh-huh. And he goes, I didn't know you had malice towards the ape. And I said, yeah, there's a lot of people here that have malice towards it. I said, I don't have malice. I'm just taking more of a business approach that I've always taken, and that is number two is unacceptable. I said, you'll see. He goes, well, I win either way. And I said, that's right. And finally, you're seeing this. I said, it doesn't matter who's number one or number two, as long as we're raking it in over all the other fuckers, right? Yes.
I love your Mark voice. Yes.
Buddy.
I've never really had, you know, for being in the same building as the man, I never really had any specific dealings with him. I do remember being at a staff Christmas party, sitting there, and I had been there the whole time and was conversing with people and frolicking as one does at a Christmas party. And there was the little presentation, you know, where the salespeople with a million mile club and all that crap. And he went through and started listing all of the employees who had not attended the Christmas party and listed me.
Yes.
And I'm just sitting there looking at Michelle like, am I the most invisible person ever? You know, because it was like, I know somehow this is going to look poorly on me. Like, I'm not a team player or something, you know.
Right.
But I didn't feel comfortable going up to him and going, hey, I'm here, you know.
No, I did that, remember? I went, she's here.
Like,
she's right over there. She was probably getting fingered in the coat room or something.
No. That was the same party that Eric from the Ape fell off. We were, what was the name of that place? River City or something
River City
like that?
Brewery, yeah.
Yes, and that second floor with that little waterfall thingy, and he fell off that and plummeted, like, you know, the story down into the little pond thing.
A fucking idiot. Yeah, I got so big for my britches. Our ratings were so huge that when Rick Tracy got sick, I mean, he came into the parking lot one day and he was yellow. I mean, he was jaundiced. He was yellow. His drinking had finally caught up with him. And Mark was like, we need to let him go. And I went, yeah, to rehab. I said, he needs our help. And he goes, I'm sorry. He goes, but this is unacceptable, you know. And I said, you will have my resignation so fast if you don't take care of this guy.
Aw, good for you, Lex.
And he goes, you're going to stake your career on a drunk? And I'm like, I'm not staking my career. Do you know how fast I'll have another fucking job after what I've done here? Please. You know, and I said, this is on you. You know, how can you fucking sleep at night? This guy's dedicated the last 15 years of his life to this place.
Did he work in L.A.?
No. And he said, oh, all right. The guy's life. Oh, all right. So yeah, he funded everything all the way through the liver transplant and everything. I mean, it's probably like $750,000 of insurance.
Good.
And it's like he just threw it in my face time and time and time again. And had I not done that, I would have never gotten the greatest story of all. You remember what a Yankee fan Rick was.
Right.
Well, he finally came up for his liver transplant.
He was at the top of the list.
He was at the top of the list. And he's getting ready to board a plane. He got the phone call. And on the way to the airport, he gets a call. And they said, turn around and go back home. It's not your time yet. And he goes, oh, what's going on? And he goes, they go, where he goes, actually, we're giving this liver to Mickey Mantle.
See, I remember that made national news. Uh-huh. And it's like, oh, man.
I said, you better be a Yankee fan now, pal.
Poor Rick.
And my neighbor was the guy who did the liver transplants in Jacksonville. But Rick was having his done in Rochester, Minnesota. And I said, are you doing the Mickey Mantle liver transplant? And he goes, fuck no, I'm not going to be the guy that kills Mickey Mantle.
Poor Rick.
He goes, seriously, they didn't even, you know, all this was being done in Minnesota. He goes, but I'm aware of the situation. He goes, I didn't realize the guy that got put on the back burner was your guy. He goes, I probably could have done something about that. And I went, well, he's going to be all right, right? And he goes, oh, yeah, he'll probably have one in a week or so. He goes, but it is funny.
Yes.
I said, yes, livers are funny.
Especially when Charlie Logan that told me that story.
Yeah.
I love the dynamic between those two, which is nothing anyone ever saw on air because, you know, they weren't on at the same time. But I just loved watching Charlie work Rick, you know, and Rick being just like, mer, mer, mer.
Yeah.
Mer.
Charlie is so fucking intelligent.
He is probably the radio person, no, you know, offense or anything, that I respect and look up to the most. I feel that he's the most talented person I ever had the privilege of working with.
None taken.
I don't mean, you know what I mean, but he is, like, just spectacular.
I know exactly what you mean.
I love you, Lex.
Listen, I don't care.
He was smooth. He was smart. He could talk about anything with authority. You know, he could somehow, in between, like, Stairway to Heaven and a Pink Floyd, like, get, like, a little 60-second political thing in there and then keep going, you know? And it was like, wow, you didn't even break the flow, you know? It was like, you're just so awesome.
Sounds like you broke your flow.
And he was such a cutie, too.
Yeah, listen, he makes your girly parts wet. I get it.
I would love to hear him tell the story again about his very first air shift in Chicago. I'm sure you heard him tell that story before.
Oh, yeah, we're like best friends. I know all his stories.
I know. Yeah. But I love that, you know, and when he was telling it, you know, and he's telling me, we were sitting out back smoking, and he's like telling the story, and
you
it was just awesome. He was smoking, too.
You were smoking him.
No.
You were smoking.
No. I just really like Charlie. Charlie, not
goose,
that way.
Goose, goose, goose.
Stop. But, you know, he was very honest about, you know, it's his first air shift on in Chicago. He's hit the big time.
Yeah.
And, you know, how nervous he was. And it's like, it's great to hear this, like, radio god talk about how nervous he was and the really terrible thing that
Yes.
Jonathan Brandemeyer, I think he said, kind of fucked him over.
Yeah. Yeah, Johnny B.
They didn't turn the delay off.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you know, hey. And then he doesn't hear anything.
Yeah.
And then 7 seconds later, he starts talking in his ears.
Oh, God.
Because you know how awful it is to, like, try talking when you've got 7 seconds of you behind you.
Yes. The best thing to do is just take your headphones off.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right, Stace, we are done for the day today. Good show. We had a great conversation about the slap and
yes,
some radio stuff that was fun. And, of course, started off the show today in grand fashion talking about I don't even remember what it was we talked about, but it was something
talking
else.
About giving Sam the birds and the bees talk.
Yeah. Birds and the bees talk. That's what it was. So once
threesomepodcast.com. Sorry.
No, do it again. Say it again.
Threesomepodcast.com.
With the number three.
Yes.
Yes.
Threesome podcast.com. That's yep. Our website. Where as of right now, Lex has not been deleting any of the old shows. So if you're just coming to the party late and want to hear like the very first episodes, they are still all at the website. You can see them there, even though they've rolled off iTunes.
Yeah. And you can go there. And that, actually, I went back and listened to our first one just to see what it sounded like.
Oh, I know I was like nervous, so I didn't talk much.
Yeah, we've come a long way.
In our 26 episodes.
That's right. So that wraps Threesome Podcast 26. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.